Hey, I'm back. It's me, Maxwell Haddad, and as promised, I have more to say about Pearl. I'm out on a walk right now, and the service is for shit here on Cape Cod, and there might be some noises that are a little loud in the distance, so what I might do is just record this short little intro and then record more at the cemetery when I get there, where the sound quality will hopefully be better. But I just want to say right off the bat, the Pearl episode from last night is killing it. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. As always, this is video nasty. Sorry. It's early. It's 10:10 a.m. And it's Monday, September 19th, 2022. It is a cloudy day. It looks like it might start raining, but it's still warm. Still warm. It got pretty cold the other day, but it hasn't fully gotten cold yet. So I'm still enjoying this warm weather, this holdover from summer. But enough about the weather. In this episode, I'll be talking about Pearl, and that's really the only movie I'll be talking about because I haven't watched another movie since then, since seeing Pearl yesterday afternoon. So I'll be talking television, books, or rather book, and that's pretty much it. No video games because I don't have my used Xbox One from GameStop yet, and no music talk, because the only music I've been listening to since yesterday's episode is music for the screenplay that I'm writing, so I don't want to give any of that away. It's all music that I probably won't be able to license anyway, but it's a vibe thing. I'm listening to it to get the vibes going, to get the vibes right, the vibes for each scene. I won't speak specifically about the movie at all. So yeah, I'm going to cut it off there. I was going to say something, but I really just, when it comes to this project, I kind of want to just do a whole episode about it, preferably when the script is done, if it's ever done. But if not, then at some point, hopefully in the near future. Anyway, I'll be right back. Okay, so I'm back at the cemetery where I often record podcasts. And there still might be some noise in the background, but let's get into it. As I said, I definitely have more to say about Pearl, as I thought that I would. I definitely need some time to digest the movie, think it over, and then I remembered some more things that I wanted to say, and thought of more things to say. So, first of all, I want to talk about the actors. So I spoke about Mia Goth yesterday, about her tour de force performance. She's amazing in the movie. I didn't recognize a single other actor in the movie, which I think was very intentional, and I think was great. This was not the case with X. With X, you know, I recognize Brittany Snow. I think with the casting there, they were kind of trying to remind people of her kind of like teen movie years, but then kind of subvert that, because X is sort of like, I don't know, it's sort of like what happens when the teen queen, the teen princess grows up a little bit, and she she sort of like, I don't know, she starts doing porno movies and then she gets murdered at a farmhouse. I don't know, it's just that kind of idea. And then, oh, you know what I just realized? The blonde girl gets killed by the alligator in both movies. Well, the blonde girl gets chopped up and fed to the alligator in Pearl. Also, there was some gore that was cut out. Like, if you watched, there was a trailer where, like, you see, like, chopped up, I don't know if they're, like, pieces of, like, geese or something, because a goose is the first thing that you see Pearl kill. I don't know. They cut out some gore. Pearl is not a particularly gory movie. I mean, the end is, like, has this crazy, like, amazing kind of extreme gore, which, anyway, I'll get to that. So, and I also want to talk about the music. I'm just thinking about the beginning when she kills the goose and how it's got this kind of, I don't know, it's this weird, I don't know how to explain it, almost like 40s or 50s melodrama feel, and the music is part of that, or even like a television show or something. It's kind of like curious music, this curious old-fashioned music, and then it turns out Pearl is crazy. It's this weird, interesting combination of like 40s melodrama, 70s grindhouse, with like a 2022 sensibility or weird sensibility in a way. I think that's like part of it. That's sort of what's happening. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to describe. It has a unique flavor, this movie, which I did talk about yesterday, but, you know, I'll end up rehashing some things in this episode. So, Pearl, let's see. I don't know why I just read Pearl. I'm, like, reading from my notes. Yeah, so I didn't recognize a single other actor. I thought I recognized the father at first, because the first shot that you see him in, he sort of looks like this other actor, but turns out it wasn't him. And he actually gives a really strong performance, a great performance, really. And he's not able to really do anything. It's kind of like all in the eyes. This guy is immobilized. I don't know if he's paralyzed or, I don't know, they call him infirm. They use all these kind of like old-fashioned terms and old-fashioned language, which I really like. I really like the script and I like the language that they use. So, yeah, didn't recognize a single other actor besides Mia Goth. Didn't recognize a single other name in the opening credits besides Mia Goth, which I think was very intentional and I think really added to the movie. It felt a lot more period, because these all looked like actors who could, these all looked like people who could have lived in 1918. So it actually immerses you more in the time period, not recognizing anybody. You know, you see Brad Pitt walking around and you just immediately think Brad Pitt. You don't think 1918. So like, her mother just looks like this stern woman who fled Germany or left Germany for America. They never give you like a ton of backstory, but there are definitely hints, which I like. I don't like too much backstory. I like kind of hints of, I like hints of what happened before and hints of what happened after the movie. And in this case, you kind of know. It's a really interesting ending, the way it ends. The whole thing kind of felt old-fashioned. It felt like sort of like a relic almost. It didn't feel like 2022 in a way. But like I said, maybe it did have some of that kind of weird, jumbled 2022 sensibility. Because it is kind of it's a mishmash. It's a combination of things. So, in the case of, the ending is really good. Spoiler, Howard, finally returns from war. He sees what she's done. He sees this grotesque dinner scene with this maggot-infested pig, and her parents set up, her dead parents set up at the dinner table, and it's just very kind of grotesque, but also interesting and beautiful, actually, in a way that I think only Ty West could have pulled off. And if you haven't seen the movie, you'll be like, what the fuck are you talking about? But it makes sense. It gets to that point. So then Howard is kind of in shock, and then she kind of steps out of the kitchen, and she says, oh, Howard, you know, you're back. And then the movie ends. And what I need to do is watch X again to see if Howard is her husband in X, which means that they stayed together even after this craziness. So maybe she explained it to him in some way, and he still loved her. Clearly, she's a psychopath. Clearly, if you watch X, she's a psychopath. But what you don't get from X is that she's been a psychopath since she was young. Like, when I saw X, I thought, okay, this woman hates these young people, resents them, is jealous of them in a sense. They come here, they're fucking on film, making this dirty movie in her farmhouse. You know, who the fuck are they? Where are they in X? Are they in, the barn? Maybe that's where it is. It's weird. It's like I need to go back and watch X to just see all the kind of intricacies and connections and kind of little nuggets. Anyway, so just jotting down some things here. So yes. So back to the no-name actors. Again, I'll read from my notes a bit. The no-name actors help to further immerse you in the period setting. They look like 1940s actors in a film about 1918. And Pearl kind of feels like that. Maybe that's a good way to describe it. It feels like a movie made in the 1940s or 50s, but set in 1918, which gives it an interesting feel. So the best shot of the year, I can't believe I didn't completely forget to talk about it because I talked about Mia Goth's performance, but I forgot to talk specifically about this one shot in the movie, which is the best shot I've seen in any movie this year. And it's this very long take of Mia Goth just delivering this great dialogue, sitting at this table. You see how crazy she is, but she reveals more about her character than anywhere else in either movie, and it makes her more sympathetic and interesting, and you get more of her story than you're going to get anywhere else. She's talking to this blonde woman who she ends up killing in the next scene, who is Howard's sister. So, in other words, her sister-in-law. And she reveals some things. The dialogue is amazing and interesting, and I love the words that are used, and the way she delivers it is amazing. Mia Goth just has this great voice and this great delivery. She almost kind of mumbles sometimes. She's got like these big lips. And in this scene, she's kind of crying and her mouth is getting sort of mucousy. I don't know how actors do it sometimes. I really don't. I don't know how she's able to emote like that. And I mean, when you see the tears, you see the mucus, like, it's real. When I see acting like that, I'm like, that's real. That's not even acting. Like, she's really doing it. It's amazing. That's the best performance I've seen all year, and the best shot I've seen all year. And if you've seen Pearl, you know what I'm talking about. This comes towards the end of the movie, and that and the next scene represent the climax of the movie, and then the quote-unquote falling action, if you want to use, like, middle school terminology. The falling action is the next 5 to 10 minutes, and then the movie ends. So to get specific and to get into heavy spoilers, the scene with her and Howard's sister, I can't remember the name of the sister. If they even say the name, I think they do. They never give the guy's name who's the projectionist. They discredit him as projectionist. And I love his line where he says, "I'm the projectionist." I was going to actually, I used the line, "I don't like reality," as the episode description for last night's episode, but I was going to use the line, "I'm the projectionist." I used to be a projectionist, and I just love that. So anyway, in terms of, what was I going to say? In terms of, Howard's sister. Okay, so she's at the table. She reveals more to Howard's sister than she's probably revealed to anyone. Howard's sister, when it finally comes back to her, she's kind of looking down at the table, and then she kind of says, "I should go now," basically, like, this bitch is crazy. But that scene, the long dialogue scene with Mia Goth, and then the next scene where she kills her sister-in-law with an axe, those two scenes represent the peak of the movie. They represent the climax of the movie. Particularly the axe scene and the shot of the axe murder, that is the true climax of the movie. And then when she's chopping up the body and setting the table for dinner, that's the falling action. And then Howard coming home is the ending, or really kind of the epilogue. There actually is a cut to black where she's sitting at the dinner table between her dead parents with the dead festering pig in front of her, and it cuts to black. And I thought that was the end. I thought the movie was going to end there. So I'm right. It truly is an epilogue when it kind of fades in from black and the caravan of soldiers pulls up and Howard hops out and there he is. He survived the war and he's back home and he discovers what Pearl has done. So the tracking shot that follows Howard's sister as she kind of is quickly exiting the house, and then we see Pearl in the background kind of casually pick up this axe and she chases her down and axes her to death. That's the best shot I've seen all year in terms of just like cinematics and camera movement. It's amazing. It's that shot is pure cinema in a way that I don't see in movies anymore. So that was exciting for me. That shot was truly exciting. It also reminded me a little bit of Fargo, actually, when he kills the guy with the axe. What's his name? Peter Stormare kills Carl Showalter, played by... So Gare Grimsrud kills Carl Showalter, played by Steve Buscemi, with an axe, and then famously puts him in the wood chipper. Spoiler, if you've never seen Fargo. And if you haven't, stop this episode and go watch it right now. This scene in Pearl reminded me of that, where you have the actor in the foreground who's about to be killed, and the actor in the background who is wielding the axe. Sure. And the axe comes down. And this scene, I think she's a bit more aware of what's going on. I think the Carl Showalter character is so kind of sort of narcissistic and cocky, and in that scene he's just kind of like fed up and he just is like, whatever, fuck everything. I don't think he realizes that he's about to get killed with an axe, whereas Howard's sister has more awareness. She has some awareness of how crazy Pearl is, and I think I would have to study both shots. I'd have to really look at both of them. I think she is kind of glancing back, seeing Pearl approaching with the axe. So she's kind of more aware of it, and she kind of starts to run. She starts to run, and then she trips and falls. Kind of a horror movie cliche, but it makes sense in this shot because she's so freaked out. She's not really paying attention to the road in front of her, or I guess the kind of, I don't know what you would call it, the driveway in front of her, the dirt drive in front of her. And she's also, you know, a lady in 1918. She's probably not used to running. Anyway, she trips and falls, but I think she gets back up and runs some more, but Pearl is able to catch up with her and axe her. So I want to talk about what happens after that, which is the disposal of the body. She chops up the body and she feeds it to her, kind of her pet alligator, which is amazing, animatronic alligator. One of my favorite things in the movie is this alligator, and it was the same with X. I love this guy. It's just an amazing animatronic. And I love that it's Pearl's pet in this one. I think she feeds the body to it, if I'm not mistaken. She must, yeah. She tosses it in the lake. There's also the great exploding body scene, which was in the preview, which is the best exploding body I've seen in a long time. And it happens when she takes an alligator egg and brings it back to the barn. And then what I thought was going to happen was she was going to have this little baby pet alligator, and it was going to be like a little animatronic, and I was like all excited. But then she crushes the egg. But then you get this incredible exploding body, which is one of the best shots in the whole movie. So I was fine with it. So, I would describe this ending as beautiful gore. The way the white skin looks, it's very, very pale. It is a dead body, but she also has a very pale complexion. And then you see the axe going into it, and it's all practical. And it looks like the way it would really look, but also heightened and surreal. And the axe just cuts through it like butter, and it just cuts through it so perfectly, and it just looks so cool and perfect. And when she chops off the head, and there's like this little piece of this flap of like muscle or something, it just looks so fucking cool. And then, yeah, and then the beautiful red blood, and you get it dripping from the axe. And part of me wishes it was just shot in a more straightforward way, just straight on. What they did with the editing, or what Ty West did, I think he edited the movie or co-edited it. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'll just say that what they did with the editing is like they did a kind of like weird, kind of hazy, almost psychedelic, kind of split screen thing, like a mirror kind of effect, which is cool. It kind of heightens the whole thing, and I tend to like things that are psychedelic, and it works. And maybe it just makes it even cooler and more beautiful and more interesting. I don't know, but I want to see the version of that scene where it's just shot straight on and you just see her chopping up the body. But it's also a montage. So, and you got this night, this kind of cool, this nice music going, the score. So it does kind of work. And while I was watching the movie the entire time, I didn't think about the music, and the music is so important to setting the mood in this movie. And then I didn't, and then over the credits, the music's playing, and I thought, wow, I didn't think about the score at all while I was watching this movie. But that's actually a good thing, because it just blended right in and just really helped create the feel, or created the feel. So I guess the kind of one other thing I wanted to add about this movie is that there's an element of the old school women's picture to it. I always think of Mildred Pierce, which is a 40s movie. When I talk about this, there's a movie called Laura, Otto Preminger, which I maybe is another example of this. Those are both kind of noir examples. Mildred Pierce, was that the 50s? It was 1948, around there. I've seen Mildred Pierce. I saw it in a theater, actually. I've never seen, what's it called? I've never seen, the one I just met, Laura. Anyway, these aren't necessarily noir movies. They're just kind of like the women's pictures that I'm talking about. It's just like back then, maybe I did mention this in a previous episode, back in, kind of 30s, 40s era, early to mid 50s. There was this sort of genre that doesn't really exist anymore. I think you see echoes of it in movies like Pearl, but it doesn't truly, one of many, many genres that just truly does not exist anymore. Or do not exist anymore. And that's the women's picture, the woman's picture, which is a movie about a female character, follows a female character, gets into her psychology, and really stays with her the whole time, is really about her arc. Oh, by the way, that scene at the dinner table is Pearl's arc, sort of cresting. That's what it is. I was gonna say that's what it represents, but it's more than that. That's what it is. So these women's pictures, and I'm not an expert, but the woman's picture is, yeah, it's centered around a woman. And generally, what it was they would cast a movie star in the lead, and this would be her movie. It would be a vehicle for her, in a sense, what they would later call a vehicle. I don't think they had that term then. But you see this a lot, like with guys, like action stars, like in the 80s. And even into the early 90s, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, Sylvester Stallone. These were movies that I used to love as a kid. These were vehicles where, oh, Harrison Ford. So they would cast these actors early to mid 90s. They would cast these actors and then they would center the movie around them, and then they would use them to sell the movie. Keanu Reeves, even a little bit. But they used to do this with female movie stars. They were the biggest stars in Hollywood in the 40s, and they would center movies around them, and they would use their image to sell the movie. And the movie would be about the character. What it would really be about was the character that they were portraying. So they were character studies, which is what I believe Pearl is, essentially. And I always think it's strange when people talk about how misogynistic the past is and how sexist Hollywood used to be and how much more progressive it is now, when women ran Hollywood back then. They were the stars. Movies were made that centered around them, and there was even a whole genre centered around women, that a whole genre that loved women and supported women, and this was in the 40s. I mean, it's strange to me. Now, of course, there was always an element of misogyny. There always will be an element of misogyny, and things are more progressive now in some ways. But I just think it's simplistic and reductionist to say that the past was sexist, and we are in a more enlightened, progressive era now, which we are in many ways. But to just say that simply, flat out, without any caveat, I think is overly simplistic. So, that's really all I have to say about Pearl. After seeing Pearl, I later watched Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which is amazing. Just keeps getting better and better. I watched episode 5. There's only one season right now. I mean, it just came out. There are only 10 episodes, so I'm really parsing it out. Trying not to burn through it too quickly. Trying not to overload on Cyberpunk Edgerunners. After that, I watched Attack on Titan, which is a kind of classic anime, which I had never seen before. And which I like anime when it gets more into sci-fi. This gets more into, there's almost a weirdly kind of like medieval setting. I mean, it is sci-fi. I believe it's about this village surrounded by walls, and then these giants called Titans come in, and they have these weird big grins. They have these creepy faces. The Titans are cool, but it's more fantasy to me than sci-fi. I don't think it is sci-fi. I think it is kind of like fantasy, and it is kind of does have like a medieval setting, I think. I don't know. I watched part of the first episode, and then I stopped it. And then I jumped back into it when the story was already underway, so I don't know too much about the setting. I mean, there are people that are, like, obsessed with this movie. I don't know too much about it. I mean, this show. Anyway, I'll probably end up continuing to watch it. But I was so kind of gobsmacked by Pearl. I just needed to kind of chill out and watch some anime. So that's what I did last night. And then this morning I read, I started Chaos by Tom O'Neill. Read the first 22 pages. There's this intro about Vincent Bugliosi where he's pissed off at Tom O'Neill, and then the first chapter gets into the murders, probably gives the best and most accurate description of the murders themselves that I've ever read. And that's how I started my day. The book is really interesting, really thorough and well researched. And it took 20 years to write, famously. That's kind of like the story behind the book, I guess. You know, it all started in 1999, and he gets into that. And then it's published in 2019. I think I might have said 2020, but it's 2019, which is the same year that Once Upon a Time Hollywood came out. Which, I was going to say that's my favorite depiction of Manson and the Manson Clan, but actually the book, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which came out 2 years later, came out last year, or was it 2020? I think it was 2021, I'm not sure. The book itself is actually my favorite depiction of the Manson Clan, particularly the Creepy Crawl chapter with Pussycat. that's just one of the best things Tarantino has ever written, in my opinion. But there's even a little blurb from a critic at the beginning of, at the head of Chaos. And I never read those blurbs, but I just was flipping through those pages to get into it. And I noticed that one of the blurbs from one of the critics started with, "Forget Once Upon a Time in Hollywood." And then it probably goes on to say something like, you know, "This is the real story," or whatever. Which, sure, there might be some truth to that, but it's just kind of, like, bullshitty to me. It's like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a fictional Tarantino movie, and this is a book that he's been, a true crime book that Tom O'Neill has been working on for 20 years, so it's apples and oranges. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up the episode there. My name is Maxwell Haddad. This is Video Nasties. Thank you for listening. I'll be back tomorrow night with more gooey goodness. Peace for now. Okay, there is one thing I forgot to mention. I watched The Kardashians this morning. I'm getting back into that show. Kendall's on the show. She's back. Kendall Jenner. My favorite Kardashian. That is all. Thank you again for listening. Talk to you soon. Peace.